Welcome to the Diplomats Podcast on Asian Geopolitics. I'm your host, Ankit Panda, straight from New York City, and joining me today is my colleague, Prashant Parameswaran. Thank you for joining me, Prashant.
Yep, thanks. Good to be with you.
And Prashant and I today will discuss a couple flashpoints in the Asia-Pacific. As always, we've done this on a few of the recent episodes on the podcast, but we talked a lot about the South China Sea since that's such a hot topic. We'll do a bit of that today. We'll specifically talk about a recent announcement from the Chinese Foreign Ministry that land reclamation activity on some of the features in the South China Sea where China's doing work is coming to a halt. And Prashant and I will just break down what that actually means and what that doesn't mean. And after that, we will talk a bit about the recent cross-border special forces operation that India carried out against insurgents based in Myanmar, and to talk a bit about the implications of that and what that means for Indian foreign policy and for Indo-Myanmar relations. So Prashant, you wrote a bit about this announcement from the Chinese Foreign Ministry. For those of you listening, I'll include a link to Prashant's piece in the description if you want to read his arguments. But essentially, you're a little bit skeptical of this Chinese foreign policy, a foreign ministry announcement on the South China Sea. So what does that announcement actually tell us, and what does it not tell us about what's going on in the South China Sea?
Yeah, so I think the announcement that came out last week, basically the essence of it was that the Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson mentioned that China's land reclamation activities, or some prefer to call them island building activities, would essentially end on some of the islands and reefs, and they would be completed in the coming days. My key point that I wanted to make in that piece is that it, first of all, it doesn't really tell us anything that we don't already know, because as we know, China is completing construction on some of its features, and its some of the other features are going through additional construction. So they're on various different phases of construction. And since the announcement doesn't really tell us anything new in terms of the progress on these specific features or whether construction is going to end in specific features or all of them, it doesn't really tell us anything new from what we've heard thus far.
Can I just say something on that? I think we should be a little bit careful when we talk about construction versus reclamation, because I know that there was some confusion with the initial headlines that came out after this. I remember I had some exchanges with a few experts working on this on Twitter, but they wanted to be very clear that reclamation or island building might stop, the actual shifting of sand and creating these creating actual land on these reefs or low tide elevations. But what isn't going to stop, and the foreign ministry didn't indicate, is construction. And that includes, civilian facilities, radar facilities, actual buildings, actual infrastructure on these islands. So I think that, there's a big difference between reclamation and construction that we should be careful about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally agreed. And I think that's sort of the second point, which is that, U.S. officials have been warning for months that China is going to be moving from essentially, we've been talking a lot about China sort of creating these islands from, close to out of nothing. And what they're going to be doing on some of these features, at least, is civilian and military facilities. So the question is, are we going to be talking about installation of military facilities, not only radar, but potentially artillery equipment that U.S. Surveillance has picked up over the last couple of months? So, that's going to be, I guess, the next debate that we're headed for in terms of what we can expect there. So, right. I agree. Very important to distinguish between the construction and the reclamation.
Yeah, and from a diplomatic perspective, it makes sense that China would make this sort of an announcement. I think I'm starting to see a bit of a, China has a provocation cycle when it comes to these disputes. For example, last summer's dispute with Vietnam actually mirrored this in a big way. First we have this huge kind of provocation that just kind of begins, and Vietnam notices this oil rig in its territory that was just very briefly announced by the Chinese maritime authorities, and then China announces all of a sudden that its work is complete and that it's pulling out this oil rig, and it starts to start a bit of a charm offensive. And I think we're seeing that a bit with this South China Sea situation. We obviously have the strategic and economic dialogue, which begins this week between the United States and China. And tensions between the United States and China have been hot recently. We saw strong language from both sides, especially at the Shangri-La dialogue recently. And all of this is eventually going to culminate in Xi Jinping's state visit to the United States. So I think it makes sense that China is trying to cool the rhetoric a bit. But, based on what we saw from Assistant Secretary of State Danny Russell when he previewed the Strategic and Economic Dialogue, which came – I believe his preview came after the foreign ministry announcement. There was little acknowledgement of this. I mean, the United States, you know, recognizes that this is clearly an attempt to appear conciliatory, even though construction is still going to continue. And I should add, you know, I also find it funny that every foreign ministry statement on the purpose of China's activities in the South China Sea right now, this reclamation and construction, always begin with, apart from satisfying the need of military defense, China is constructing X, Y, and Z for, you know, everything from hydrography to marine life research and, you know, search and rescue and all of these things. So that's always an interesting aspect. They're very open about the fact that, you know, these facilities will be there for military defense purposes. And that actually, you know, segues into how they've been talking about the prospect of a South China Sea air defense zone, that they will evaluate the need for this, which I think is, you know, directed again at the United States. But Prashant, what do you make of the, you know, the diplomatic optics here? Do you think, you know, ASEAN states that are watching this, the other claimants in the South China Sea, the Philippines and Vietnam especially, do you think that they'll be willing to, you know, buy Beijing's line on this at this point?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as I mentioned in the piece, so we should be very wary because as you mentioned earlier, China is prone to taking sort of these sort of alternating periods of assertiveness followed by charm offensives, so sort of ratcheting up tensions and then dialing down tensions again. So we're not really sure how long this sort of period of cooling will last. So yeah, definitely agreed that it's tied in with the, you know, with the whole strategic and economic dialogue with the U.S. and China, and also Xi Jinping's visit to the United States in September. But we're not really sure where China will go back to its very assertive actions in the South China Sea. And I think the region has seen a number of these cycles, so they're familiar with the fact that it's not clear if this means that China is now going to be more supportive of moving forward on a code of conduct in the South China Sea, for example, where it's been dragging its feet thus far. So there's a bit of caution there. I also think from the United States perspective, it's a little bit challenging because I definitely think over the last year or so, you're seeing a lot of heated rhetoric coming out, not just from the United States government, but also U.S. scholars, U.S. policymakers. I think like a lot more of them have been a lot more forthcoming about what to do about China. But I think there's also been a little bit of a debate against that, saying we should really put the South China Sea issue in perspective. We shouldn't be talking about the U.S.-China going to war, although a lot of that, in my view, is kind of overrated. I don't think there's actually a very high chance of an actual war. I think, in fact, the Chinese have gone through great lengths thus far to make sure that they don't escalate things to the military level. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very interesting to see how this debate will shift if we see sort of a period of cooling down and potentially over the next few months. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's absolutely a trend that I've noticed as well. And, you know, I think that just comes down to the issue of a lot of people in the United States are asking themselves, where do they draw the line as China rises and it naturally begins to assert its claims when it comes to disputed waters, its right to, you know, rewrite the rules of international finance and development funding, as we've kind of seen that. Mm-hmm. That's a separate debate we've seen with the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. And, you know, that is a question that a lot of people need to find a good way to answer, is that are these islands in the South China Sea, is this issue worth drawing a line over? And, you know, I mean, my perspective is that the principle of the freedom of navigation is, you know, near and dear to what the United States stands for in Asia. And I think that's also a big point of philosophical disagreement between the United States and China. China simply doesn't see the United States as a Pacific power or a power with the right to assert its ability to operate freely as a military in the Pacific. And while the United States, you know, as we saw with Carter's comments in Shangri-La and in Hawaii on his way over to Singapore right before then, he said that the United States will continue to sail, fly, and act as it has in the past in the Asia. And I think, you know, I hope that, you know, this is something that the United States and China will talk about at the Strategic and Economic Dialogue and hopefully between their leaders when Xi comes to Washington later this year.
Yep, absolutely. And I also think, you know, we've had a number of great pieces actually on The Diplomat from, you know, Greg Austin, Carl Thayer, and a number of other folks as well. So I think we're also sort of a a good place to look for the debate on this issue. So, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a plug there. But if you're listening to this podcast, you obviously are hopefully also keeping up with the debate on the South China Sea in our pages. Just a very brief digression before we move on to the Indo-Myanmar issue, Prashant. You know, what are you hoping to see out of this strategic and economic dialogue this week?
Yeah, so I think this is sort of one of the dialogues where the U.S. and China have sort of used to at least gain some confidence building in terms of how they approach the overall relationship. So I think the usual issues that will be talked about, you'll see conversations about economic issues. How can we, you know, advance the bilateral economic relationship? There may be some conversations about the environmental dimension of all of this following the sort of climate change mini deal, I guess, that was sort of reached last year between the U.S. and China. And then, you know, the sort of tougher points, I guess, would be the South China Sea issue, which obviously, as you noted, the optics of that have been sort of shifted somewhat before the meeting. But I suspect there will also be some exchanges there as well. And then a topic that we've written about extensively at The Diplomat, which is sort of cyber and how we see the evolution of that between the U.S. and China, because that is a very sort of complex issue that has several dimensions. But I think the key issue with this is that, you know, as you pointed out earlier, I mean, a lot of this is to set the stage for Xi Jinping's big visit to the United States at the end of this year. I think that's sort of the seminal event for the relationship this year. So I think there might be a lot of discussions about what kind of agreements, what kind of things can we work on before his visit here. I should also point out the U.S. and China signed a number of military agreements last year. They weren't especially significant or groundbreaking, but they did sort of mention how they're going to regulate the conduct between their various militaries. And I think if we can see some progress on that this year, that would be sort of a promising, albeit limited, progress in the U.S. China military-to-military relationship.
Right. Yeah. No. That last point reminds me of you know, that the United States and China should be focusing on creating de-escalatory mechanisms to prevent any sort of miscalculation, especially in the South China Sea. And there is progress on that front, but I definitely think that they could be doing more. But I think, yeah, this will be an interesting few months until Xi's visit in September. And on the cyber front, actually, the timing with, you know, this the news becoming public of the hack at the Office of Personnel Management has really set things back a bit for both sides, and I think that they will have to address that in an open manner at the Strategic and Economic Dialogue. But we'll obviously be watching that very closely at The Diplomat, so just stay tuned for our analysis. We'll have some of that later this week as officials meet here in the United States. And let's move on a bit and talk about the recent cross-border operation between India and Myanmar. And we've had a ton of analysis on this issue also at The Diplomat. I'll link a few of those pieces in the description to this podcast as well. So on June 4th, 18 Indian Army troops were killed in a cross-border strike by insurgents who belong to the National Socialist Council of Nagaland. Nagaland is an Indian state, part of the northeastern part of the country, bordering Myanmar all the way on the eastern front of the country. 4 days later, on June 8th, 70 Indian commandos and allegedly an Mi-17 helicopter crossed the border and essentially ended up striking back at these militants, claiming anywhere between 20 to 50 militants dead, I believe, and the reports on this were varying. And this issue has turned into a major sort of topic of public debate in India for a variety of reasons. For the Narendra Modi government, this was an attempt to portray itself as stronger on insurgency and national security in contrast to the predecessor Congress government. And a lot of commentary also focused on, you know, at least right in the immediate 24 hours aftermath of this cross-border strike, that, you know, this could have implications for how India handles Pakistan and China. But I think, fortunately, in the days since, we've kind of realized that that actually isn't a very good template. And Prashant, I think you wrote about that. So maybe you can, you know, run us over, you know, why this isn't a very good template for how India might respond to Pakistan and China. But if anything, this incident is an important reminder of another flashpoint in Asia, which is the border between Myanmar and India. It's a topic that doesn't get discussed much, but, you know, Myanmar has one of the longest running you know, states of civil a civil instability in Asia. You know, ever since its independence from the British in 1948, there has been a variety of sort of ethnic groups, separatist groups fighting for independence, a variety of them across the country. And I'm not an expert in the details of this, but, you know, it comes to stand that at least from the Indian perspective, the Myanmar border is an issue that is starting to gain additional increasing salience for the government. And so, Prashant, can you just talk to us a bit about, you know, why this won't be any sort of real model for how India is going to handle its borders when it comes to Pakistan or China?
Yeah. So I think the two critical points to emphasize here. I think the first is that India and Myanmar have a number of sort of understandings and agreements about the cross-border problem between them, which involves insurgents. So then that goes back decades, actually. And so India has actually carried out several of these cross-border operations before. And the two countries actually have an agreement for cross-border access in a way that is not the case with Pakistan and China. In fact, if India were to do the same thing, and I think Pakistan has been quite verbal about this subsequently, Pakistan would not be very happy about that and would, you know, respond in kind. So, but, you know, I should emphasize, you know, since I wrote that piece, I mean, it's become very clear over the past few days that even in the case of Myanmar, you know, the Indian government may have overstepped or crossed the line too much with its operations. So a couple of high-level Indian officials were in Myanmar, actually, following the operation. And yeah, according to reports about what happened at the meetings, which have now been publicized, the discussions did not go very well, and the government in Myanmar was not very happy about the operations. They occurred very much within Myanmar's territory, so a lot of the cross-border operations earlier were carried in a much more limited sense. These were not only not as limited, but they were extremely publicized on the Indian side. Right. And so Myanmar, you know, was not too happy about that. And I think some of the neighboring countries, as I mentioned earlier, and you talked about it as well, most prominently Pakistan, have not been very happy about some of Indian officials talking about this as the advent of some kind of new doctrine.
Right, right. I think they've called it the Doval Doctrine after the Indian National Security Advisor. It is interesting because, you know, India calls Myanmar its bridge and its look east or act east policy, whatever you'll call it. And, you know, it's a friendly country, but yet you have Indian officials very publicly embarrassing the leadership in Myanmar by, you know, making these statements. I mean, Myanmar obviously doesn't want to be seen as a country that can't police its own borders and lets, you know, anybody kind of come in and carry out these strikes. I mean, like you said, there are sort of understandings between the two sides, but mm-hmm. in this particular case, I think, you know, we saw conflicting information because initially we saw the president's office in Myanmar confirmed that there was cooperation between the two sides, but later they recanted that and they say Myanmar doesn't allow any foreign states to carry out operations within its territory. And it was, you know, the way that it was handled publicly was really unbecoming when it comes to a covert operation. You know, the key word there being covert. You know, and you compare this, you know, to how the United States has handled, for example, its operation against Bin Laden and Abbottabad in 2011, which was, mm-hmm. you know, a similar cross-border covert strike without, well, in that case, without the complicity of the Pakistani authorities. But, you know, I think that is something that the Indian government needs to appreciate better. And there have been a number of commentators that have said this already. So it's very much part of the public debate. And I think the government recognizes that while it appeared strong on militancy in the Northeast, it really did make a misstep by, you know, chest thumping, as I believe one of our commentators in The Diplomat put it, after the incident.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But yeah, this will be something that we'll also be keeping an eye on at The Diplomat, particularly as, you know, Myanmar is going through a period of transition over the next year with an election scheduled and continuing violence on its eastern border with China, of course, along Yunnan province, another topic we've written about extensively. But Prashant, thanks a lot for joining me today, and hopefully we'll be back next week with more. Thank you for listening.